Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, March 19th, 2018, and this is episode 135 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and tonight joining me from his pecan forearm and two pups is Eric Nathanson. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing well because of those two puppies. I'm tired because of those two puppies, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah, totally welcome to parenthood, in a sense. I mean, We got our first child, quote-unquote, was a dog before we had two kids, and it's good training wheels, I'll tell you that. It's definitely not having gerbils or anything like that, so they're cute, man. Congratulations on those. So.
Oh, yeah, Bonnie and Clyde are a lot of fun, I'll say that.
I love the names. That's just awesome. All right, so we got lots to cover. We haven't recorded in about 2.5 weeks. I've been extremely busy with work. Traveling to Seattle and doing other things in the past. But we are here. It is spring training. We are still in spring training ourselves, along with the players. But lots to cover. So first of all, the Giants have made several cuts over the last 2 weeks. Let's start with today's cuts. It's their second round. Most notably, option to AAA today. Mack Williamson, Austin Slater, Shaw, Suarez, Tyler Beede, and Derek Law. You got any thoughts about those guys?
I'll start at Law and work my way back. Law, I think, is a disappointment. It really looked like he was going to be the eighth inning guy or the seventh inning guy the last couple of years. He had his chances, and it's really kind of surprising that Law couldn't stick on the big league roster. And you see, like, guys like Strickland and Guerin have progressed so much farther and better than him. So Law kind of surprised me. Beede a little bit, but, like, I don't know. It feels like Beede's never going to get over the hump. Shaw, I was impressed with in the few times I saw him play. I think that he's going to be an option down the line in the outfield. But Mack Williamson, that one, it didn't surprise me, but I wasn't too happy about it. Mack's had the best spring of any Giants player. He's driven in like 14 runs. He's hit like, he's over 300. He's almost at 400. He's knocked in a few home runs, four home runs, changed his swing. So Mack surprised me, but it didn't. But this sounds like Duggar might have a shot now.
Yeah, no, I think Duggar is, I think most people thought that he was going to start the year in AAA, but given where he is right now, it looks like he might be positioned to start the year in center field with Austin Jackson. So that's really interesting. Now, you said about Law, I totally agree with you. I mean, he's one of those guys where 2 years ago we thought he was going to be a mainstay. He was going to be a new core four, a new part of the core bullpen. And he just has not glommed on quite yet. He's had moments of brilliance, but other than eating a lot of ice cream for a TV show, he hasn't done much for the Giants aside from a few brief instances. Look, the spring training, I mean, he has 7 innings so far. 7 innings. I mean, obviously the Giants, this is what they have to go on with everyone. Everyone has typically less than 9 innings if you're a reliever. So it's a very small sample size. And if you don't blow, you know, the crap out of the water, I mean, you're on the bubble. And he's given up, 5 runs in 7 innings. So that's a 6.43 ERA. Yep. And, you know, only 4 strikeouts, 2 walks, 9 hits. So he didn't do anything to render any attention. He plenty of starters, including Johnny Cueto, and look at Jeff Samardzija, oh my God, are just getting lit up in the spring. But at the same time, when you're Derek Law, you're not that seasoned veteran. You haven't earned that oomph. So you got to do what you've got to do. You can't experiment. That's not a guy who can experiment. And if you don't produce, then you're in danger of getting, you know, demoted. And that's what happened to him.
Yeah, it was. He was a guy. I thought he was going to be the closer at one point. I really did.
Yeah, me too. No,
I mean, now they have a better back end of the bullpen now with Melanson and Watson and Dyson and Guerin and Strickland. So a lot of those make sense. But like Okert's still treading water. Osich is still in line. Derek Holland is still in line. You know, those are the names that come from these cuts. So the guys that are still left fighting for these jobs. And like, there's Holland is looking to be, he's pitched better. I know, like, this is where we're going to go next is the pitching staff. Well, maybe. But it's gotten to the point Suarez and Beattie, they're done fighting for that fourth and fifth spot. Law is the odd man out in the bullpen at this point. Yeah. I just don't see a way, unless, you know, somebody gets hurt, I don't see a way he comes back. You know, but Mac really just, I don't know. I keep looking at Williamson. I thought he had a shot. I thought the Giants were going to go Blanco and Williamson as the fourth and fifth outfielder. But it does. It looks like Duggar.
Yeah, it looks like Duggar's in there along with Blanco. And, of course, you've got go ahead.
I was going to say, Parker's the guy I was trying to think of as I was talking there. Parker's one guy whose name we haven't seen yet. He hasn't been optioned. He hasn't been talked about because he's out of options. So if the Giants don't want to keep him, they're going to have to put him through waivers. And it's pretty much why Mac lost out. Mac still has options, but Parker doesn't. But I think that the Giants still, at the end of the week, are going to have to put Parker through waivers and end up with Duggar and Blanco.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Duggar has options left, right?
Oh, a ton.
So, yeah, exactly, because he's brand new. So I think they're going to start with Parker because of the option issue. Because if they have an injury, they can avoid that. So because they're probably going to start the year with five outfielders. So it's going to be Blanco and I think Parker. I think Duggar's going to get option to AAA. And then they got the other three, of course, to start the year. So with Jackson and Pence and McCutcheon. So it's just one of those things where it's business, right? I mean, they don't want to lose Parker. So if they option him now, that's not going to work. But maybe, you know, in a few weeks, they're going to keep him up. Option Duggar, and then wait for an injury to happen, because I think most people thought that Duggar was going to start, you know, in AAA. So I think it's reasonable to think that's going to happen, and I'm sure, you know, Parker or Pence or someone in the first 4 weeks is going to get injured, and suddenly you're going to see Duggar up. But Duggar's been a hell of a player this year. I've seen some of his videos. Granted, everyone, I am not. You guys have probably seen, literally with your eyeballs, more Giants spring training baseball than I have, so I'm not going to pretend to be an expert with my eyes, but what I hear from everyone is that Duggar has been playing an excellent center field. He has been just covering the outfield like crazy. Today he went from left center to right center to track down a ball. He's just been excellent out there. So most of the writers have been saying that there's no doubt in their mind that he is a true center fielder and that he has the range. Clearly he has, you know, the bat to be minimally effective with a little bit of power. So, yeah, him and Austin Jackson eventually I think is a great duo in center field, but it just may not start that way because he's young and he has plenty of options left and time.
I want to see him run around AT&T Park center field, though. I want to see Duggar go. The thing I've noticed about him on some of what I've watched, and I've seen some of the games where he's played, thankfully, he's got an amazing first step. He's got a great read for the ball off the bat. You know, it's the type of thing where when you're watching Field of Dreams and Shoeless Joe starts taking a step or two one way as the pitch is being delivered, you feel like Duggar can read the ball off the bat like that. And it gives him that extra step, and then his athleticism takes over. That's what's really impressed me, though. He's got baseball instincts just oozing out of him.
Nah, he's a real baseball guy. So let's talk about the pitching. It's pretty much set, we think. We're down to 14 pitchers, including Will Smith, who's headed to the DL. So, of course, he's going to be not part of that 14. That means one more trim to make. So what do you think? Do you think it's going to be Derek Holland and Josh Osich make it ahead of Fernandez?
I do. I think the bullpen. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, they're going to carry 12 pitchers. That's what they said, which makes sense because with the way the schedule lines up, we've talked about it, Bumgarner can start three of the first nine games. They don't need a fifth starter but twice in April. So they can round out and have one of, you know, somebody like Holland be a swing guy, which is what I think he's going to end up being. And Melanson's there, Dyson is there, Watson's there, Strickland's there, Guerin's there. That's five. So Osich and Holland, I think, round out the bullpen, and Block and Stratton are the fourth and the fifth.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting because this has come together a little bit, you know, a little bit cleaner than I guess I would have anticipated earlier.
Agree. Totally agree. Like, everything's lining up for the Giants so far, and it's just really strange.
Speaking of which, they're near 500 in spring training. No one really cares about the record. They're 11-13. So are the Dodgers, you know, which is, if it's any indication, who cares? You know, no one cares about records. But what is interesting are the statistics for spring training. And the Giants, who, of course, the last several years have been near the bottom in average, runs scored, home runs, slugging, OPS, all those offensive categories, and have always been pretty good in the pitching categories, especially in their World Series years, are kind of trending the opposite way this spring, which has nothing to do with the regular season. We all get that, but it's interesting because they have never really led the league in offensive categories in spring training the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So right now they're leading in team average at 297 and OPS at 886. They're second in home runs with 42, RBI at 157, runs at 170, on base percentage at 366, and slugging percentage at 520. So yeah, you're talking about all these offensive categories out of 30 teams, not just the 15 in the NL. We're talking about 30 teams in spring training. They're first or second in all those major offensive categories. So I think that's fantastic. I mean, everyone says, oh, yeah, well, it's spring training and the ball flies and all that. Yeah, but it flies for everyone. So
yeah,
you're still comparing apples to apples. So, you know, I don't care that you're hitting the ball further. You're hitting the ball further than 28, 29 teams. So I think that's great. That's a really good sign for the Giants.
They won a game over Colorado. What was it, 13-0 the other day?
13-0 yesterday.
And,
yeah,
yeah, and they're also losing some 11-10 and 12-11 games. So it's not true. It's not like the games they're losing are like these 2-1 ball games where the one run was scored on a ground out double play. They're hitting the ball all over the yard. There's just this renewed sense, like hitting. I've said it here before. I'll say it everywhere. Hitting is contagious. And it feels like it's been that way up and down the Giants lineup throughout spring training. A couple guys get rolling and the rest of them get rolling. I can't remember, you know, I have to look at the scores, but I can't remember a time they scored under 5 runs in the last few days. I'm sure
They've been piling it up. Yeah, 13-0 yesterday really helped. But conversely, their pitching stats have not been stellar. So they're 19th in ERA at 4.97, 18th in batting average against at 267, 20th in whip at 1.45. So we all know, we've talked about this in years past. I mean, it's been, what, we started in June of 2011, so it's been 6 or 7 spring trainings we've podcasted about. Guys like Lincecum and even Bumgarner and Matt Cain and some of their better starters over the years have had very, very poor springs because they're experimenting and they're playing and they're doing different things because they know they have a spot in the rotation, so their job is not jeopardized. So sometimes that inflates their numbers. Now, Bum this year is great and a few other guys are great, but overall as a team, if you look at batting stats, if you're near the top, you go, okay, well, how's your hitting or your pitching going? Well, they're kind of, I wouldn't say at the bottom, but they're in the last, you know, the latter third of the major leagues. So that is a bit of a concern. Again, this is spring training and the ball flies, but it flies for everyone, just like the hitting that I just mentioned. So when you're in the bottom third, it really doesn't matter if you're playing on the moon or playing on Jupiter, where the gravity is 20 times what it is here. The point is that you're giving up more runs than your counterparts. So hopefully this is not going to be the trend for the year. Hopefully it is for the offense, not for the pitching. But aside from – I'm going to just bring up my concern, my number one concern in terms of these numbers comes from the Shark. He – even though he's a horse and he pitches deep and he's never injured, my God, Eric, this guy has been giving up home run after home run after home run after home run. And I know the coaches and others keep saying it's no big deal, it's just spring training. But he is giving up gopher balls at a prodigious rate. And that's always been his knock in the regular season. So it's not like it's unexpected. Now, it's unexpected to be this high. But are you concerned as much as I am?
I want to say yes because I should be concerned. But I don't know. For some reason, it's weird. This is one of my wild predictions, and it totally came true. Yeah, I am. I'm concerned. I like Smarsha. I really do. That's the problem.
No, I do. Smarsha. I love the guy. I really do.
I think he's a really good dude. I think he's great for the clubhouse. But he's struggling so much so that he's going to pitch in a minor league game tomorrow. And I believe it's Holland or Block. I don't know who's up. Will be pitching in the regular spring training game. So Smarsha is not even going to face major leaguers tomorrow. It's concerning. It is. Especially if he's going to be at the third slot in the rotation. I don't know if there's a scenario where Smarsha gets bumped out of it somehow and goes back to the bullpen. I mean, Holland, Block, and Stratton would all have to perform for that to happen. Yeah. So I have concern, I do, but he's already admitted to trying new pitches this year, and his grip is a little different. He and Kurt Young are working on some new things. So which is weird to say, not Rags, Kurt Young.
Yeah, Kurt Young.
It's weird because I've looked at his picture a few times and he's always in A's gear, so he looks like an A to me. But you know, Smarsha, he's working on stuff. But you know, when do you stop working on stuff? We're 10 days away from opening day. Smarsha's got 2 starts left. You know, when are you gonna get it together? Is the bottom line. So yeah, there's totally concern about Smarsha, but Cueto, I have no concern about. Baumgartner has been stellar. Baumgartner, I mean, every time Baumgartner pitches, you see it. The Beat Guys tweet, start the season now.
Yeah, no, Johnny Cueto has been, you know, not great, but I'm not too concerned about him. There's not been too many red flags, but Madison Baumgartner has been, you know, Madison Baumgartner. I mean, last year he had his incident with the bike. We don't think that's going to happen again this year. He swears it won't happen again with his winking one eye and sarcasm, but at the same time, you know, yesterday, what, 6 innings pitched, no runs, 1 hit. And then he hit a home run, too. In fact, I have it here, Eric. Cue it up for me. Here we go.
And the pitch. Baumgartner, high drive, left field. It is out of here. And even in spring training, he lights up this crowd with his power, and Shaw shaking his head. And Giants fans are giving Baumgartner a standing ovation. Even Rocky fans are standing.
Even Rocky fans are standing.
Even Rocky's fans are standing. Here we are. We have a starting pitcher hitting a home run in spring training, and it gets national publicity. I mean, it's just incredible. The guy hit it 445 feet, and you tweeted this out on our TortureCast account, and I looked at it through that. But when he hit it, because, of course, the cameras in spring training, when it's not televised, are these static cameras just kind of covering the field of play. It was kind of from the press box, kind of above home plate, and it doesn't move, of course, the camera. So right when he hits the ball, you see which direction it's going. It's like left center field. And the left fielder doesn't move, like doesn't even take a step back. It's like he just was like, yeah, that's gone. I'm not even gonna move.
I was gonna say I don't even think he turned his head. I no. watched it over and I'm like, the third baseman moved more than the left fielder on a home run over the left fielder's head.
My only reason, other than he knew it was gone, is that he was like looking at his phone or a butterfly in the grass. I don't know. I mean, because he like literally didn't even go like, oh, never mind. I mean, I could totally see someone taking two steps and then realizing it. He didn't move. He didn't move.
I've done it. I have been in left field and I have been in center field when a ball gets hit, and I just looked up, watched it go, and trailed it for the 50 feet. Then it landed past the fence. It's quite a sight when that happens. It's just so funny that it's Bumgarner, not, you know, McCutcheon or Longoria or Posey. It's Bumgarner.
Yeah, 445 feet. Holy crap. We're going to see more of that, of course, this year. It's just unbelievable. By the way, Buster, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think Bum's prime for a good year. I'm not looking to go deep into him right now. His head seems to be like totally screwed on straight. I think he's in for a good year, both at the plate and on the mound.
Now, clearly, not that anyone has ever questioned it. Clearly, they're number one. He's going to be fine unless he gets on a motorbike or does something else. He's going to be fine. He's going to get his 3 ERA or lower. He's going to win 15-plus games. He's going to do what Mad Bum does. It just really, really, really hangs on Cueto and Samardzija in the 2 and 3 slot. And that's what my main concern is. Because 4 and 5, that's, you know, it's gonna be what it's going to be.
Yeah, but it could be a rotating door all year.
Yeah, it could be a rotating door all year, but... You know, we're talking Cueto and Samardzija, and Samardzija has always been the horse, but, you know, Cueto up until last year has been pretty much a horse until all of his blister issues. And if those blisters don't resolve themselves and or Samardzija, you know, starts giving up more home runs, if two out of their five starters at 2 and 3 are jacked up, that's it. That's the season. I mean, they have to be above average. They have to, because 4 and 5, we don't know what's going to happen there. So any contender, that's the formula, right? Not just the Giants, but anyone.
Well, yeah, but you don't want your number 3 starter to be pitching like a number 5 starter. And that's the concern that you absolutely just shared about with Shark, is since he's getting lit up like a Christmas tree, you'd rather have him as the 5 starter, not the 3. Like, what the hell happens after Bumgarner, in a sense? Weirdly, I think it works itself out somehow. I don't know what the hell the answer is yet. But, I mean, that's the main concern. Bum's the only mainstay. And Giants, all championships, all playoff teams have been fueled by pitching.
Yeah. So as far as, like, hitting stats, just interesting to look at. But Buster Posey's pretty much leading the pack for anyone with 18 at-bats or more. He's 9 for 18, hitting .500 with a home run and... 4 RBIs. It goes down from there. Hector Sanchez, of course, was only 3 for 7. I mean, my God. Perez was 5 for 11. You have some of these names on here I don't even recognize. R. Howard? Who's that?
R. Howard. 10. That's Ryan Howard. Not the same Ryan Howard.
That's no.
Ryan Howard.
That's right. No, that's right. Yeah, Ryan Howard. He was 4 for 10. I mean, it's kind of sad that some of these guys who don't have a chance of making the team get so few at-bats. I mean, you're talking about 10 at-bats over, like, 20 games. It's kind of sad. Brandon Belt, though, 38 at-bats, one of the most at-bats on the entire team, you know, hitting .395. That's fantastic. Austin Jackson, 27 at-bats, hitting .370. Longoria, .346. Gregor Blanco, .333. You kind of go down the list, Crawford at 325, Mac Williamson, which we just talked about. He's probably has, looks like he might have the most at-bats on the Giants at 44, hitting .318. McCutcheon at .313, Sandoval .308, but he's way up there in RBIs behind Mac Williamson, ironically enough, leading the team in 14 RBI. Panda's got 13, so... Yeah, I mean, you have some pretty good numbers here. Very offensive-minded team. Joe Panik, 36 at-bats, only hitting .250. You know, it's
wow. That surprised me. Everybody's been over like 300. Every guy seems to have their hitting eye down pretty good. There was a game where I did watch where last night? Kutch went 3-for-4 last night. Posey might have been Posey. Posey went 2-for-3. My bad. You know, these guys, they're the middle of the order, the 3-4-5 with Longo, Posey, and Kutch, whichever order they're in, they seem to really string together hits when they're all in the game. Like, a lot of the good scoring has been coming with the starters that you mentioned. It's not like garbage innings, you know what I mean? Like, Kyle Jensen has hit 5 home runs this spring training. Yeah. And he just got optioned. There's no way in hell he's going to really get any at-bats ever at the big league level. But, you know, half of those came against guys who are going to also be in the minor leagues.
Well, that's the problem, is that some of these guys who bust out, like Kyle Jensen, even Duggar with 4 home runs, Mack with 4 home runs, Hundley and Belt and Parker with 3 home runs, they're hitting against guys that many of them, which are going to be in double or triple A. So, you know, you kind of go, okay, well, I mean, they're not going to replicate these numbers in the major leagues, at least as far as the minor leaguers. You hope they do, but it's not a litmus test in how they're going to do in the show. So, you know, for some people who think, well, this guy hit 520 at-bats and hit 3 home runs, he should be on the big league club. It's like, yeah, that's like a week in the major leagues, guys, against harder pitching. So you can't take what they do in spring training as a reason to be on the club for an entire year. It's not how it works. These guys know. It's not just the numbers. I mean, you and I know, Eric. I mean, you could barely flick a ball, be fooled on a curveball or off speed, and flick it in a right field for a dying quail and get a base hit. Absolutely. Or you could just be dead set red on a fastball, see it right in the middle of the plate, and crush it. I mean, absolutely tattoo it on a lower angle, and it gets caught literally at the wall in left center field for a nice running catch. And it's an out. And you just go, I will take that line drive 100% of the time over the dying quail. But in those, you know, 20, 25, 30 at-bats in spring training, you know, if that happens 2 or 3 times, that's a difference of 100 points in your batting average. It's huge. It's absolutely massive. So some of these guys can get screwed by that, but that's why they have eyes on the field. I mean, if they see a guy who crushes the ball 3 times that get caught in the warning track versus 3 hits that a guy bloops, they know that. And so even though if a guy gets released that has a higher batting average, it doesn't necessarily mean that that guy is a better player because of the small sample size and, of course, the bat contact. So
I think that's what's happening to Mack this year. I think the Giants brass wants to see him do it consistently instead of just have flashes, because some of these guys feast on the low pitching and some of these guys can actually hit the major league pitching.
No doubt. All right, so we're going to wrap it up here, but Forbes magazine, Forbes.com, of course, did a little article here. Now, we've seen the articles in the past, and we all love AT&T Park, and we are biased, but Forbes did release a ranked list of the top, you know, ballparks in Major League Baseball. Course from number 1 to 30, and of course at number 1, since we are a Giants podcast, we're going to go ahead and promote this, is AT&T Park, which we love, we agree with, we think that that's absolutely the case. And before we get to number 30, which I want to ask you about, I've been to several parks, more than several parks. Some of them are in the top 10 here, including Camden Yards and Safeco Field and others. Camden is fantastic. I thought Camden, which really spurred this whole retro park design back in the late 80s, was fantastic by HOK Architects. It's great, and it's still up there in the top 5 according to Forbes. I think Petco, which isn't quite in the top 10, I think maybe it's up there. It's a great park. Dodger Stadium, of course, is an older facility, but it does very well in today's realm of what they need to provide. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good parks in there. I was a little surprised near the bottom are things like Marlins Park. I mean, we're talking about a multi-million dollar stadium. Let's not talk about the attendance, right? We all know that that's an issue in Marlins Park. The park itself, other than the center field atrocity that we all see every night on SportsCenter when Stanton was hitting home runs, it's like, how can that be near the bottom? It's a brand new park worth almost $1 billion. What is going on here?
It's got to be really ugly to be that bad.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's a few others down there, but on this list, Eric, what else do you think that you agree with or disagree with?
Well, it's funny. Busch Stadium is third on the list, and that just kind of surprised me because back in the day, Busch Stadium was kind of a ho-hum, and that's a stadium you've been to. And I didn't expect it to be that high, but, you know, with the kind of baseball-rich history that St. Louis has, I guess you expect it. Dodger Stadium's fourth on the list, which just cracks me up because from what I've heard, it's a crap hole. There's Petco at 9. Wrigley was 10th. That surprised me. When I clicked this link earlier today, I was like, oh, Wrigley's going to be towards the bottom. But I'm guessing a lot of the stuff that they've done recently with renovations has come into play. AT&T being the top makes sense. My favorite part about AT&T Park is that you can walk around the park and never take your eyes off the game. I mean, in theory. You have to contend with people and things like that, but you can always get a view of the game as you're walking around the park. Like, I grew up going to Wrigley, where you had separate tickets for the bleachers and the grandstand. So if I had tickets down the right field line, I could not then end up in the right field's, bleachers. Just was impossible. I'd have to buy a whole new ticket. So I always got a kick out of that with AT&T. When I was there, that was one of those things I did, is I walked the whole stadium. And I could see that you could literally see from any place in the park. And then all the way down at the bottom of the list. Well, here, this is my favorite part. All right, this is my favorite part. I'm going to take it this way for a second because the A's took a shot at the Giants on Twitter recently. There's a meme with Krusty Krab, and I don't fully get it because I don't know SpongeBob. But they were trying to claim that the A's were, like, whatever, better than the Giants. The A's are 29th on this list. Yeah. Oakland Alameda is 29th. I mean, that's pathetic. You are in one of the best areas. And then Tropicana Field comes in 30th. And I find it funny that I've covered two games with a press pass in the span of a month. The first game was at stadium number 30. The second game was at stadium number 1. The Trop sucks.
So you should go to the average field after that, which is number 15, Comerica Park. So go there next.
Nah, who wants to go to Detroit? I'll go to 18. I mean, seriously, who wants to go? I have a stepkid living in Detroit. I don't even want to go to Detroit. I might go to SunTrust. Who the hell knows? I've debated going to Miami, but, like, I mean, how do you have a bad stadium in Miami? You have sunshine. You have hot people. You have music. You have palm trees. Like, how do you have a bad stadium? Like, the Angels are 25th on this list. How do you have a bad stadium? The Trop, I'll say this. They're a dome. They need a retractable roof. It's great that they're a dome. I live there. It rains every day. I totally get it. The humidity sucks. Right. But a retractable roof would be so much better. No, there's so many things. Well, they're building a new ballpark, and I actually used to live like a stone's throw from where they're building the new ballpark in Tampa. But the Trop sucks. It's like a cavern. Like, it's like a convention center. You go in and it's just this big rafters and high ceilings and industrial lighting. It doesn't feel like a baseball stadium. It feels like McCormick Place in Chicago is the only thing I can think to relate it
to. No, 1996, I went, so it's what, 22 years ago? I went to go visit my cousin, and I was in Houston. He was in Galveston. So I landed in Houston, and me and my brother went to a baseball game at the Astrodome before they blew that up. And I had never been to a proper dome for a baseball stadium. Of course, domes today are different when they were back then, so I'm not going to categorize all domes as the same, because domes today, like even Safeco Field and, you know, Chase and all these other ballparks are, you know, retractable, or Minute Maid Park and all that, they still have natural grass. The Astrodome was kind of like in that same mold as Tropicana Field, the multi-purpose symmetrical artificial turf stadiums.
Right.
And oh my God, I was so excited to go. I was like, it's the Astrodome. This is like where Nolan Ryan like killed. This is where Will Clark hit his first major league home run and his first at bat off Nolan Ryan. This is like where, you know, World Series have been played in an LCS and da 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 da. And I swear to God, the moment I went in and got to my seat, I said, oh my God, people watch baseball here?
Like, yeah.
What? And but mind you, this is before AT&T opened, okay? This is 96. This is still a Candlestick, but no matter what, I still love Candlestick, no matter all of its deficiencies, but it was AT&T compared to the Astrodome. I mean, it was... I couldn't get out of there fast enough, man. I'm not kidding
you.
It's like
a warehouse.
It was totally like a warehouse. Here's the worst thing. So we sit down and we're like watching, and you know, they have those seats that are like one on top of another. Like each seat is like 2 feet above the previous seat. So it's like this really vertical climb. So you get almost like this vertigo looking down. It's not like this gentle decline, right? It's like, oh my God, the person in front of me, his head is at my feet. That's how, like, the vertical incline is insane. So you get a little bit of a vertigo feeling. But we went in, I don't know, the first inning, of course, you know, they announced the Astros lineup, and we were up in the upper deck, of course, because we had crappy seats. And the fireworks go off, but all that smoke doesn't go anywhere. You're in a dome, right? I mean, it's just, it was unbelievable. The smoke is just hanging in the dome. And we're up on the third deck. We're in the smoke. So the smoke is like permeating in this third deck. We're smelling it. We're getting high off of this shit. And we're just like, I need a beer and a dog. I need something to like get away from this smoke. So we go out. We get our beer and our dog. And we come back. And then there's just this haze that hangs at our eye level for like the first three innings. I mean, it was just the worst. And then, you know, everything just sounded like it echoed. It was dull. It was just, the sound reverberated. I mean, it was one of the worst experiences I've ever had in a baseball game. And that was my only experience at the Astrodome, which should be a good one, right? I mean, it should be. Yeah. But my best experience, or my worst experience at Candlestick, is better than my only experience at the Astrodome. It was just,
and
it was
sure
awful.
It wasn't sold out or anything like that.
Oh, no. It was like, you know, one of those 10,000 or less kind of games, because that's what they were back then. Yeah.
I got lucky at the Trop. The night I went, I mean, even though there was still stuff tarped, it was Joe Madden Gnome night, and everybody wanted a Joe Madden Gnome, so they sold out. I mean,
they sold out that night? I don't even remember that. Wow.
Yeah.
Because when I talked to Longoria, which he was there that night, which is funny when you talk about it, right? He said he's used to seeing 8,000, 9,000 per night. I mean, that's kind of like their average attendance. So you did see a rare night. For sure.
Yeah, the local guys were telling me it was busy. The one thing, I'll say this about the Trop, and this isn't even as a fan thing, as a ball player. The warning track and the grass are the same material. The only difference is the color. They're all AstroTurf. And I hated that. I walked on it. It's like spongy. I totally get why Longoria is going to be happier on grass and dirt. It's like spongy. There's like a give, but your foot stops. It hits the cement underneath. And there's absolutely no difference between the warning track and the field. So, like, if you're chasing down a ball, and part of the reason for a warning track is so your feet are warned, you know, that's why it goes from grass to dirt. My feet are warned. but it doesn't do that there, so you could just slam in the wall. And that drove me nuts. I absolutely hate it aesthetically, and I hated the way it felt, too.
Now, it's... We love AT&T. We are spoiled. I know you've only been here for a game or two, Eric, but God damn it.
It's the best ballpark awesome, I've ever been to. It is. It's the best ballpark I've ever been to.
I know. It's like I keep thinking to myself, I have not been to many ballparks. In fact, I'm going to look at this list again.
Your list is bigger than mine. Well, I'm just saying. That sounded bad.
Okay. Your list is bigger than mine. Okay, number one, AT&T. Been there. Number two, Camden Yards. Been there. Amazing. Number three, Busch Stadium. Been there. Four, Dodger Stadium. Been there. So I've been in the top four. Now, number five, PNC. No, I have not been there, but it looks amazing. Coors Field, number six. Fenway Park, been there. Saw a game, did the whole tour. Incredible park. One of those parks where it is influenced by nostalgia. There are weird angles and support beams that block people's views, but there's something about it, guys. If you've never been to Fenway Park, when you go up on the left field, you know, monster, and you tour the bowels of the stadium, and you're up in the upper right deck. I mean, it's just, it feels like a ballpark, and you feel the history. It's incredible. Number eight, Kauffman Stadium. Have not been there. Number nine, I have been there. Petco Park. Incredible park, to be honest. It's very similar to AT&T. Just doesn't quite have the sight lines that the Giants do. So I think that's where it really, really fails there. Even though it's in a great part of the Gaslamp District. Number 10, Wrigley Field, been there. Incredible field. 11, Safeco, been there. Again,
wow.
It's very similar to Petco, where it has all the modern amenities. And it looks great from the inside if you just look at the park itself. But when you look at the backdrop, it's fine. But it's not an AT&T or PNC. You don't see the ocean and the buildings and all those kinds of things. Then it goes from there, and I haven't been to a lot of the other fields here. We're talking Yankee Stadium, Citi Field, Globe Life, Comerica, Target, Miller, SunTrust, Citizens, Progressive, Minute Maid, Rogers. Yeah, I haven't been to any of those. So what's really cool is that, you know, of the top 11 fields, I think I've been to seven of them. Which is most of my fields. So apparently the West Coast is done very well.
It seems to. It leans that way. You notice that?
Yeah, or I just like to go to very popular parks. But the A's, of course, at number 29, right ahead of the Trop. I totally agree with that. I've never been to the Trop like you have, but oh my God, the A's. Oakland Alameda Coliseum just sucks, man. It's just, the weather's great. It's better than AT&T. It's certainly better than Candlestick ever was. But man, it's just a depressing place to watch baseball and football. But the A's are looking forward to developing a place near Jack London Square. And I personally know of a lot of Giants fans that don't want that to happen because they want the Giants to be the only game in town, but I'm against that. I think that it's healthy to have a Cross Bay rival. I think that the A's deserve a really good stadium. And, you know, in 10 years, if the A's are the new Giants and the Giants are the new A's, so be it. But the reality is, that'll just be the next place I take my kids that maybe is nicer. We'll see.
Yeah. Not the literal toilet that Alameda is.
Yeah, no. So that's pretty cool. I love that the Giants were rated number one by Forbes.
Yeah.
Right, so how many days till opening day, Eric?
It's 10 days till opening day.
10 days. Dude, this happens every flipping year. Spring training starts, and I always think to myself, oh my God, they got 6 weeks, you know, 5 weeks. It's going to be, well, it's opening day. It happens so fast.
Well, it's not It's on a Thursday this year, so it's weird.
Yeah.
All teams will be in play on the opening day, like for the first time since 1980 something. Like all
Teams because we don't have some stupid like opening Japanese or Canadian or Mexican series, right? Yeah, it's all in America, so or Canada. So yeah, we have that going for us. So I always hated that. I always hated the whole like, you know, March 26th. You know, is like a 2-game series in Japan, and then opening day is 5 days later, and I was just like, let's not do that. Let's just start in America and just all in the same day. Let's just go.
Well, the one thing that I always took from that though is, did I even remember 2 months later that there was 2 games before the season? You know what I mean? Like, did I even remember that the Diamondbacks and Dodgers were both 1-1 before the Giants played a game? I don't. Yeah. But when we're in this mode, 10 days before opening day, we don't want to be teased with some like 2-day baseball in a foreign land, and then no, we just want everything to start. Just start.
Just start. Just be normal. We don't need to do this. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I do remember that I think the Diamondbacks and Dodgers, wasn't that in Australia? Wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Okay.
Yeah.
I know Cubs and Mets in Japan, but that was that's
what it was.
Ago.
It was Cubs and Mets in Japan. That's what I was trying to remember. So, see, our memory isn't that great. We can look back on it and understand what it was, but the reality is we're not going to really remember these opening day series. NFL's trying to do that with NFL in England and all that stuff, and that's fine, whatever, but don't start the season in another land. I mean, you got these guys switching time zones, and then they come back, and they got to have 2 or 3 days to adjust. It's just stupid. It's just... You know, it just feels like each team gets off the season on a different foot. So if you want to do that in the middle of the season or just before the All-Star break or something like that, yeah, maybe. But don't start the season like that. Just start the season, everybody just kind of like breaking camp, doing their exhibition series. Then they have a day or two off, and then they start the regular season. And everybody is in their regular time zone doing their regular thing. I just think that's the way to do it. So, so what date is it for the Giants? Is it April 1st, April 2nd?
What March is it? 29th.
Is it that early?
Yeah, 10 days. It's March 19th, 10 days.
Damn it.
So it's a week from Thursday, man. People, it's going to sneak up on everybody. Damn
it. See, it's sneaking up on me. It's sneaking up on me right now.
People are going to turn around next week and be like, what the hell do you mean there's baseball this week? The Giants will be on TV every day starting Sunday.
Oh, my God. They have a 4-game series in L.A., and their 4th game is on April 1st.
Yep.
That's insane. So,
but
yeah,
that's because they're getting more days off during the season for the travel and the rest. So the players agreed to that. In the, you know, the same thing that screwed them contract wise helped them out here with the scheduling, and that's why it's a longer season, even though it's not a longer season because of the extra built in off days.
God, April 29th, that's next Thursday.
It's gonna come out of nowhere. It really is. It's gonna come out of nowhere. Nobody's gonna be in the habit of watching baseball yet, you know.
And then their home opener is against the Mariners on the 3rd.
Right.
Whatever, Mariners.
Right.
It's like, and then right back to the Dodgers for 3.
Well,
which
thank
is insane.
Goodness, because who the hell wants to play the Mariners?
Well, no, but I mean, it's important to note the Giants play the Dodgers 7 times in their first 9 games.
And think 10 about times that. In the month of April.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And then, 10 times in the month of April through April 29th. It's 10 times. And after that, after April 29th, it's only 9 more times the entire year.
Right.
Which is insane.
And they end the season against the Dodgers. So there's only 2 random series spread out the rest of the way, which is fun. I mean, the Giants are all talking about getting off to a hot start. Well, you need to beat the defending National League champions if you want to do that.
Yeah, the Giants need to load their roster. I mean, I know they were talking about taking advantage of the off days to have Bumgarner pitch every fourth day as opposed to every fifth.
Do it.
We'll see if that happens. I certainly, with the Dodgers looming in 7 of the first 10 games, they got to do it. I mean, they have to. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you don't want Suarez or any of these other guys pitching their fourth or fifth games instead of Bumgarner. I'm just go with Bum. Please. Yeah,
they're gonna do it too. Last year left a sour taste in their mouth, just like it did ours.
Yeah. All right. So hopefully in the next 10 days, we are going to have our season preview, which we've done every year. We hope to have Willie and Ben back for that. It's yet to be seen. If we don't, we hopefully will have a couple of special guests to add to our cacophony of two voices, because I'm sure you guys are getting sick of that. It's been an incredible spring. I think the Giants are marching to the beat of a amazing tune right now. We hope to record, like I said, next week before the season starts. It's going to be next Thursday already. Holy crap.
See, it totally hit you out of nowhere.
I keep saying that, like thinking we're going to squeeze in another episode before a season preview, but I don't think we will. I think this is it. I think this is our last episode before a season preview. And, you know, our season preview, of course, if you look back at the previous years, last year was probably the worst we've ever had in terms of predicting wins and losses. I had been in the lead by far, guessing to the win 3 out of 6 years. I mean, that's just like, that's incredible. I'm sorry, but I'm just going to toot my own horn and say that's insane. Last year pretty much destroyed any progress I had ever made. Because no one in their right mind predicted that the Giants were going to lose 98 games. No one was even close to that, so everybody was pretty much destroyed. So it's going to be interesting, because that was the first year that we were so far off as a collective. We'll see what we all come across this year. I don't think anyone's going to think 98 losses, but you know, we'll see what happens. We got a lot of predictions from you guys, our listeners, in the realm of 110 wins last year, which we had fun with. But
yeah, it's
given
which
our
is amazing
win,
to think about that they finished 50 games worse than whoever that was predicted.
But given our win predictions last year, 110 wins really isn't that far off from a playoff team. So, you know, we were kind of in the same boat in terms of difference. So we'll see what we can do. All right. Well, until episode 136, this is episode 135. I'm your host, Chad King, with Eric Nathanson. You can follow me at ChadK21 and Eric at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook. Just Google TortureCast, or on Facebook, Google it, and you'll find us. You can also find us on iTunes and Podomatic. And even Spotify now, which is pretty cool. I actually asked Alexa the other day to play TortureCast, and she did. And suddenly I was speaking. It was pretty amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm totally going to have to try that.
It was pretty cool. Ben and Willie are not here again, but that's okay. We're going to get them back in the realm, in the fold. They're doing their own thing right now. But you can follow them individually at Fried Duck. For Ben, and at Willie Dills for Willie. So until we see you for episode 135, this is Chad and Eric signing off. Episode 134 this is episode 135. It's up until 136. My gosh. Vodka's getting to me, man. We'll see you next time. Episode 136. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.